Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for the weekend edition. Also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast. If you are still having trouble accessing the daily editorials through the podcast, please just research and search for the KE Report. That should work better for all of you, as we have been receiving still a few emails of people telling us they're not getting updates on their podcast player. For this weekend show, we're going to be focusing a lot, really just broadly, on the markets. We're still in summer. This week kind of flew in the face of the last month or two of trading, where markets were rebounding. A little bit of a rollover this week, and also ending the week really on the back foot. We're kicking off the show chatting with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. That is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retailer, individual side, Rick writes in The No Trader, as well as a piece called 7-Eleven, where he picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the S&P. Rick, let's start with the S&P, because it was last month, I believe, that we were chatting, and you mentioned a target range for the S&P where you thought the rally might end, or it was a position to start lightening up. The S&P almost reached those levels. Rick, take us through your overall assessment of the S&P, its health, and the probability of it rolling back over from close to these levels.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. So in answering the question, shortly after the June bottom was made in the S&P at 36.37, we went out with a bullish call, but not similar to the bullish call that others have made, which is that this is the beginning of a whole bull market, but that the positioning of the players in the market was such that we were likely going to see a significant short squeeze, with the target up at 4270, 4294 in the S&P. That is an area that we rejected this week. We've gotten as high as 43.25, which just missed by a hair, essentially touching the downtrend line for all-time high. So this is a zone we expect to see some difficulty that the market's going to have to get above. And I've been advising clients that anything north of 4250, in general terms, even up to as high as 4500, we're going to want to lighten general exposure to the equity market, with the belief that we'll be able to buy that back several hundred S&P points lower on a pullback. And I can't tell you that I necessarily think we have to come and test the lows from June, but I think up here we're in the eighth or ninth inning of this rally, and the risk reward to buying stocks at the S&P somewhere near 4250 to me is not in favor. It's 50-50 at best. We could still see a further move up, just because we're pulling back this week for the first time in over a month, as far as having a down Friday, or not a down Friday, but a down week for the S&P. It doesn't mean this is over, but we've certainly stopped at a place that many weeks ago we anticipated we would stop on this rally. And I think a lot's going to come down, frankly, to how Chairman Powell phrases what he does next Friday at 10 a.m. New York time from the Jackson Hole meeting, where central bankers of the world come together kind of in a boondoggle type of event for them. But Chair Powell will make a statement next Friday morning, and I think it will be the tone of the statement and the degree to how tough or not he is in his statement on making it clear what the Fed needs to do with rates going forward, that will determine whether or not people will buy into that and say that he's kind of dovish and that they'll push stocks higher and push through the 200-day moving average, which should kick more computers into with a low volatility, high momentum environment, which we have right now to the upside of the S&P. If we push through the 200-day moving average, which as of last night's close, we were only about 1% beneath. Now, obviously, it'll be more than that with today selling off. But, you know, we're close in general terms to the 200-day moving average. You break above that, you're going to get more computer programs buying in this type of low vol, high momentum environment, and that will push the market higher. And I will take advantage of that rally should it persist. In order to still lighten exposure in the market. I am wholly unconvinced that this market is heading for all-time highs the way the mega bulls are saying it will. And I think investors have missed the gist of Fed's intentions going forward. And I think that they were very willing to buy the depressed market, which is the same thing we did, but I'm looking to lock in profits. And I think, and I've told clients now for over a month, both institutional and retail clients, that you want to be using this type significant rally to lighten general exposure in the market for the ability to potentially get a move down towards near 4,000, which, you know, off of this week's high is, I don't know, about 7.5%, 8%, something like that. So it's not huge. It's not a 20% move I'm looking for. But I almost want the market to rally enough off of the lows that it crosses that 20% threshold so that you can get every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there saying, oh, look, bull market, the same way they declared a bear market virtually on the low. And you know, we put out a target. You'll remember because, Corey, we talk every month in early May, 6 weeks before we hit the low. I went out with a 36.17 downside 2022 target for the S&P. And, you know, the low is 36.37. That's 20 S&P points. That's 0.5%, you know, 6 weeks before it got there. We told you where the low would be, and we got within 0.5% there. And then we shortly after that turned bullish. But up here, very willing to trim and start reducing exposure to the market, not just from the recent buys that we've made, but in general to the whole portfolio. I am doing something that I have really kind of never done in my 40-plus year career, which is significantly trim my holdings in the market now. I'm also 63. I'm not a 40-year-old, so I have to think in terms also of my age and the risk and things like that. But I am using this rally to sell covered calls, to hedge my book using futures and anything that, and to sell names outright. Yesterday, you know, I trimmed a few names on the rally. If we're reaching resistance levels on individual charts, and I'm starting to see, you know, if we're hitting resistance levels on the key indexes, then with my belief that people have misinterpreted this whole rally, other than this was a great way to get people to be more bullish and shake out shorts, I'm using this strength to sell into. So I'm not in the camp that we are making new highs this year, and if we do, certainly that they would be sustained new highs. So anything north of 42.50, I'm a happy person to. I kind of look at this as a gift to lighten exposure.
Yeah, Rick, there's nothing wrong with taking some chips off the table after a well-played hand and also hedging the bets a little bit. And I think it's interesting the point you've just been making about kind of the divergence in thought on how people interpreted Powell's last Fed minutes, the way that they're looking at this as a new bull market leg. There seems to be a lot of excessive jubilation back in the markets and that the correction is over and that it's good times ahead. There's not a lot of volatility. There's not a lot of action on the VIX. So it's just interesting. Another tell of the market really is how the interest rates and bond market works. What do you think the bond market reaction has been thus far? And do you think it's on track?
So a few weeks ago, bonds broke downward of what was a classic head and shoulders pattern. And you saw yields break from beneath kind of the 265, 270 neckline down to as low as I think it was 2.52%. We actually used that decline in rates. I expected that there was a high likelihood it would be a false breakdown. And by the fact that we held above 2.58% that on that weekly close a few weeks back got me to actually get clients into a bearish, you know, we put on a put spread on the TLT. And we've been unwinding some. And today, actually, we took another chunk off. So we're down to the last quarter of that. So with rates finally getting above 2.91%, which it had stopped at twice in the last week and a half or so, now it opens the door for a bigger move that could easily test the 310 level, which was the early July high, and potentially even get up to, I'd say, I don't know, maybe 3.3%. But I'm not in the camp that says we have to take out the highs that we saw this year at 3.46. So I think bonds are in a trading range, similar to the S&P. Rates got to a point that they broke down and had people leaning the wrong way. And we took advantage of that and played the opposite direction. And we've, you know, we've had a very good trade on. We were long, or we're still long, a 118.5, 114.5 put spread. And again, we took off another quarter today, so we have a quarter left of it. But I think in the big picture, the high in the yields this year likely may stay the high. But given today's big gap up, I think that puts a bottom into the yields and probably keeps us going to cross above in the next few weeks, 3%, and again, squeeze the people who are on the wrong side of this.
Rick, I also want to talk currencies, especially the U.S. dollar, because that has been a market that seems to have benefited from this general pessimism and a bit more of a defensive trade. The dollar went through a short correction through, let's say, the second half of July and early in August, but it has come screaming back just in the last little more than a week. It reached down to about 104 and change, is back up to 108, which is very close to the high from this year and a multi-year high for that matter. Where do you think the dollar goes? Is the dollar going to continue to benefit from, again, this volatile environment and a bit more a defensive strategy for investors?
So since the spring, I've not been a big fan of the dollar, and I wasn't fighting it in the sense that we didn't go short. We just simply weren't buying. A week ago, or actually a couple of weeks ago, we went out with how important 105.06 is to stay above on a Friday closing basis in order to think that the pullback that we had from 109, which is this year's high, down to what we just got to 104 and change, could still actually hold and the dollar could rally. So I'm not a dollar bull per se. I think tactically you could probably be long the dollar because 105.06 held on Friday closes. So if you bought it, that you know is your downside risk, you know, it would be a Friday close beneath there. But I think with the fact that we're back above 107.31, which was a long-term resistance point, which back in July we crossed through intramonth but closed well beneath. Now that, you know, if we go out, you know, another week and a half or so of trading left for the month, if we close above 107.31, I think at the end of August, I think you probably up the odds that the dollar can move higher. If I had to pick upside targets from there, you're probably talking 113.5 and 121.25, 121.5 over time. I mean, that could take, you know, significant amounts of time to get to, but those would be the bigger picture upside targets.
Well, Rick, just one more on the dollar, just because it's an interesting sign of confidence in the U.S. economies over other global economies, because the U.S. dollar index is really weighted most heavily against the euro and the yen, and then to some degree, you know, the Canadian dollar, the pound, et cetera. There's six other currencies it's weighted against. It seems like a lot of the global currencies are in a bit more trouble than even the U.S. is, but there's this weird dichotomy, Rick, between people saying we've got this strong dollar and how some of that machine trading, the algos trade off of that, versus the fact that it's being eroded by 8.5% inflation every month. So what do you make of the environment we're in where we have this high inflation, but we also have a high dollar at the same time?
So it's a good point you bring up, but you also have to look at inflation elsewhere. The UK reported 10% inflation earlier this week. So as bad as our inflation here is in the US, and all you have to do is walk into your supermarket to get any sense of how bad inflation is and how much more you're paying for very basic goods compared to even a year ago, and certainly what we're paying in gasoline compared to a year ago, but other places are experiencing it too. I won't even bring it to the mix, a place like Argentina, which probably has, 70% inflation. But they've always had unstable governments, and you know that's not so atypical for them. But there's inflationary pressures throughout the world. So this, despite the fact that the dollar's rallying and eroding at 8% value a year, other places are too, if not worse. So you have to put that into the context, as well as the fact that there's always a element of safety in the U.S. dollar relative to other places. And you look at the economic situation in the EU, and it's not terribly good. And they're dealing with massive higher energy prices, and you know, Russia cutting off a significant amount of flows to them, and the price just going higher. And they're not energy sufficient themselves, that you know, they're greatly curtailing what they get out of Russia. But they need natural gas. Some of our natural gas is getting converted to LNG and then you know, getting shipped over to Europe. Europe's in a worse situation than us. And all you have to do is, you pull up a weekly chart. And I'm saying weekly just so you don't get stuck in the daily minutia. Look over the last year at a weekly chart of, let's just even use the ETF, FEZ, F-E-Z. That's the Euro Stock 50. That's the top 50 stocks, kind of the Dow Jones of the Euro Union. That, if you look at that chart relative to an S&P chart, just even if you put a cloud chart up, something that gives you a sense of perspective of where you are relative to a bull or a bear market, you can see just how much weaker Europe is. And other than the Nikkei, which is basically the strongest major global index technically, everything else, European wise and certainly China, and forget EEM, they're not even in the picture really, they're all much weaker. So the U.S. is still kind of king, and that puts the U.S. dollar as king.
Fair enough. But you know what? We are seeing weakness everywhere, it seems like, and higher inflation in some other countries. I know our audience wants to know what you think of the precious metals then, because higher dollar, that is usually a headwind for the precious metals, but high inflation, weakness in equity markets around the world, that can usually be good for gold as investors look to that as a safe haven. Again, it seems to be the dollar trouncing gold as the safe haven play right now. Rick, what do you think? Where does gold go from here? Understanding still in the big context, gold is mostly flat for this year, but it is well off some of its highs from earlier on in the year.
Yeah. So look, you got a double top in round numbers. You know, north of 2,000, gold can't hold a rally. So we got there in the summer of, 2020, two summers ago. We got there again early this year. It spends a very short amount of time there. Then look on the flip side. 1675 in gold has six hits down to it, also since early 2020. So you're in this massive kind of almost, we'll call it, $400, $350 to $400 trading range. And the middle, which is where we are now. So gold right now is at 1763 on COMEX, December gold, which is the active contract. And It has basically stalled against the downtrend line from this year's high. It's the middle of the range. Trading gold, the thing about gold, what we've learned the last couple of years, is you get a few opportunities to put on the right position, which is at the extreme levels of these moves. So, north of 2,000 or right around, even if you want to do 1950 and above, You've had multiple times to sell gold, and anything under 1700 has been the time to buy gold, and everything else in between is chop chop and very difficult to play. Gold has been the dollar's rally for the bulk of this year has really put a tailwind into gold. We peaked, I think it was February this year, which when we again crossed over 2000. It's been straight down until, I don't know, a month, 5-6 weeks ago, something like that, where it again got within $5 of 1675 and turned around and went north of 1800. So here we are at 1760. And I think gold is going to be very heavily weighted by this dollar. And if the dollar does really break out to the upside, gold's in real trouble if it takes out 1675 and stays beneath it, because that has been a wall of support for a few years now. And that level even goes back further in time as being significant. So I think anybody who's long gold has to pay attention, you know, to that level. And if it breaks with any bit of significance, then you're talking about 1450 gold as the next downside target. And if the dollar's up at, 115, 120, that's where gold's going. It will not be able to deal. The inflationary pressures are not enough to offset the dollar strength. And that's the biggest hurdle for gold right now is dollar strength. Because if it wasn't the dollar strength, I think gold would be much higher. In theory, the fundamentals for gold are still decent. And if you get a pullback in stocks, but you continue with the inflationary picture, if the dollar doesn't come back down to help gold, gold is just going to have a real hard time getting anywhere.
Yeah, Rick, as you mentioned, if the dollar is stronger and if gold does break that 1675 support that's been tested about four times just in the last year, not to mention the historic precedent, that would pull things down. It is scary to hear about 1450 gold, though. That's where it went down in the pandemic crash in 2020. But let's take a look at the gold stocks. I know that they're equities and they're not necessarily as tethered to the metal as some would think. They kind of move to the beat of their own drum, but they do respond to the price in gold, Rick, and their margins have been compressed by lower gold prices and also higher input costs from labor to cement to steel to you name it with inflation. What do you think the general or what's your take on the general equities in the gold space?
You know, if you use the GDX as your, let's say, benchmark for gold equities, and that's probably the most commonly traded ETF. It's the Market Vectors Gold Miners ETF. That's trading at 25 and change right now, which is virtually right on the lows of the year. We've gotten down here a few times before. The lowest weekly close this year is at 25.41. We're currently trading 25.36. So if we close right now, it would be the lowest close of 2022. Not surprisingly, for those who are technically inclined, 25.15 is the 62% Fibonacci retracement from the COVID low to the highs that gold made in July of 2020 and where the GDX made its highs. We are back beneath kind of the swing area, which is in the upper 20s to low 30s, as which now should be pretty good resistance. So if this breaks, we kind of break beneath this $25 level. After, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the last 6 weeks, the low has pretty much been right down here, just, you know, somewhere in that 25 and a half neighborhood. If we break here, that's not a good thing at all. That means gold stocks, and I still have some. I actually sold out of about a quarter of a position last week on the bounce, and I sold the high of the move. I was lucky to get one penny. My sell order was one penny beneath what ended up being the high for the week, and a gold name I've had for a while, but I still have three quarters of that position. And I'm looking at this GDX chart too, just as if this gives way, then gold stocks are in a world of hurt. You know, you have to think about really what's the reason for holding them. They're just not performing. They've had major sell signals, very close to their highs in the work that we do both in the spring of last year, and then again the spring of this year, a week or two before the weekly high was made this year, which was in, looks like, mid-April. So 2 weeks before, we had kind of upside exhaustion signals, and you know they've been terrible. They've been straight down since. So they're trying to build a little bit of a base here, right above 25. But with any more weakness, you're going to have a hard case to justify why you own them, as would anybody who's an analyst who works on with a portfolio management team, why you would tell that PM to be long gold names. So the unwind could happen quickly as we came off of, you know, April highs to the May lows, and then another leg down. Now you could get it given another full leg down, and then all you've got is really the COVID lows down at $16 in the GDX. There's just not much in between.
Boy, oh boy, that sounds pretty dire for the precious metals, gold stocks, as we near some of these very close levels that it sounds like need to be held. Let's switch focus over to oil then, because oil was really a standout for the start of this year as it reached 130 and then another high of around 120 in early June. But it's been selling off since that 120 and change high. This week dropped below $90 a barrel, recovered at the tail end of the week to around $91 a barrel. What's your view on this sell-off in the oil sector? Do you think it's just getting started? Do you think this is turning into a buying opportunity here, Rick?
For me, I'm looking at this as a buying opportunity. If you take a look at the COVID low in oil, which using a rolling futures contract was, I don't know, single digits. And that's when the front month contract went negative a couple of years ago. I think that was at April of 2020. But if you use a standard futures rolling contract for the active month, this month's low is right on the trend line from that April 2020 low. And you combine that with some downside timing indicators, which last week suggested we could get a bounce. I'm thinking of this that we could easily get back over 100. Now, you're going to have resistance in the low 90s, kind of 93-ish, because that's where a bunch of lows were earlier this year. So I'm not crazily buying, but I do think that we could actually get a bounce here in oil and get back up towards that $100 level. And squeeze the new shorts that came in over the last couple of weeks because the major trend line held. So that's the way I'm playing oil. It's still a sector that I'm overweight. I've cut back on how much overweight I was because at one point we had in the 7-Eleven report that you mentioned at the start of the show, we had a full, we actually went over 200% weighting relative to benchmark. So we were heavily in oil. And then June 1st, I took 30% of our exposure off. So we're now kind of close to a double weighting relative to what oil is in the S&P. So it's still a big bet on the sector, but it's a big bet on a sector that's only 4% of the S&P. You know, we're at 8%. So I still kind of like the story longer term and think that the long-term lows have been put in place in relative terms to the S&P. Remember, energy was the only sector in the S&P that if you go back 20 years, you actually lost money being in. And it's only the bounce that we've seen since last August, which is when we went overweight oil, is really when you've seen this, you know, get the bounce and be the best performer this year of any of the sectors, despite the recent, you know, declines that we've seen in relative performance. It's still, if I'm not mistaken, the number one performer this year in relative terms. So I like crude. I'm playing right now for a near-term bounce, and I'm not in the camp that we're going to $50 oil the way, you know, some analysts a few weeks ago came out with. So we'll see. But I kind of think oil can get a trading bounce here.
Well, Rick, just one more commodity to ask you about, and it's copper. They call it Dr. Copper because it usually signifies the health of the economy, you know, what people are investing in infrastructure globally. Some of that's tied to, obviously, China, and China being somewhat locked down hasn't been helping, but it's generally an indicator of how the base metals in general are doing. Wonder just if you have any thoughts on Dr. Copper.
So using COMEX copper as compared to LME copper, I used to trade on COMEX, and you know, even though I realize the world kind of looks at London pricing, I still look at COMEX pricing. So to me, when copper broke under $4 in June, it the next month it completely cratered. It went from four down to almost three. The low of the move was 313. I had put out a 303 target, so we missed by 3% or less. Now we're it's 365 ish. I'm probably a seller near 390 on a continued bounce. It may get above four, but it's probably going to have a hard time getting through 410 at this point. So, looking at it as a gauge for the economy, copper bottomed a month after the stock market did. It's bounced since, as has the stock market, and maybe if the stock market comes off, copper goes for another month beyond or something. I'm not sure, but I think given the breakdown and kind of a year long or close to a year long sideways pattern, and then breaking beneath $4, it's probably going to have a hard time getting much back above four. So we get to the upper threes, I'm likely a seller of copper.
Rick, have you ever seen moves in copper like we saw in June and July? You take the high that copper traded in June down to the bottom, that was 20%. And then in July, it was another 16%. Copper, I don't remember seeing copper move that quickly in either direction in my lifetime. What's your takeaway when you do get those sort of outsized moves?
Well, in 2011, copper had a very significant drop. And I think it was the middle of 2011. I remember there was like a 2 or 3 week period or something where it also lost a very substantial amount. I think it also kind of went from $4, in COMEX copper, down to under three in less than a month. So it lost 25% of its value. But no, we don't see these type moves don't happen often. I'm just looking back now historically in 2008, kind of when the world was falling apart, copper went from 330 in September, and by mid-October, it was $1.70. So it lost 50% in 6 weeks. So, occasionally this happens.
That was when the world was crashing, though, right? We haven't totally seen that. It's a bit different.
It is. It absolutely is. But, you have to remember when you're playing the commodity markets, and, I grew up in the commodity markets. My first 12 years out of college were trading in the pits. In New York. So I traded stock index futures. I traded gold, silver. A couple of times I walked into the copper pit, didn't like kind of the vibe of it. So I didn't continue trading there. And I actually finished my career trading in the cocoa pit. So I had seats on multiple exchanges. But when you play commodities, you have to understand where the true natural hedgers are positioned. So the commitment of traders report that the CFTC releases every week is an important gauge to see where are speculators, how are they positioned, and where what are the true hedgers, the people in the actual industry who are considered smart money, how are they positioned. So for instance, just to give you an example, right now in the oil market, in WTI oil, which is the crude oil traded on NYMEX in the US, you've got the natural hedgers are long oil at the highest rate they've been in about 3 years right now. So their open interest is on the long side. So the funds, the speculative funds, the computers and the managers in the commodity space who are just doing their own analysis and placing bets, are very negative oil right now. Now, traditionally, the smart money are considered the people in the industry as compared to the speculators. So one of the reasons that I'm also more inclined to look to be long oil is because that's what the pros are doing, the people in the industry, as compared to computers that are just using algorithms to trade. So that's one thing. So offhand, I'm not sure right now where they're positioned for copper. And before I put on my next trade, I'm certainly going to look. But looking at how a 1 year sideways pattern in a commodity that then significantly breaks, it should have, just like any chart, should have some decent resistance in and around that area that it broke down from. So I'm thinking in those terms that copper is going to have a hard time materially improving itself. And if the natural hedgers here were short copper, then they probably use this significant decline to buy and cover their shorts from the funds who got stuck trapped long copper above $4, who puked out on that June-July sell-off. So, you know, I've got to look into that too, just as part of the overall process of playing the commodity markets.
Yeah, Rick, the markets are the great equalizer, where people that are trapped long are going to be in pain, but people that are covering their shorts are going to be happy to pick copper up at a lower price. I guess I just have one more question for you, just on the speculative nature we've seen in the markets really over the last month or so, Rick. And I'm going to point to two markets. One is we saw a rebound in the cryptocurrencies, which is kind of that hotter money side of things. And just over the last couple of weeks to month, we've also seen a resurgence of the meme stocks. Everything from Bed Bath & Beyond to AMC and GameStop all started running again. Now, the cryptos and the meme stocks have rolled over hard this week, but we saw a couple weeks of that speculative fervor. So I just wondered what your takeaway was from that. Are people getting too excited too early in this? And what does it mean to you that you're starting to see that kind of hot money come back into the markets again?
Well, so it's no surprise that Bitcoin, to use that as kind of our proxy for cryptos, because it is the most actively traded of any of the crypto. So that to me is kind of, when we're talking cryptos, I'm thinking Bitcoin, maybe Ethereum, but generally Bitcoin is what I'm going to defer to. So you look, that had a massive distributive top over the last, what, year and a half or so, breaks down under 30,000. We talked about it here on the show a few months ago, that if it broke 30,000, you know, you had a quick $10,000 fall with virtually no support to be able to hold it in place. We got down to what, 18, 17 and change thousand, and we've now rallied to what, about 25,000 before pulling back today. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Bitcoin was down, I mean, it's down $1,700 now. So it's really had a heck of a bad day. And it's in line with the fact that stocks have come off hard today. So, you know, the rally of Bitcoin pretty much started right around the time that the S&P bottomed this year. So it very much has lined up with risk on, risk off. We got downside exhaustion signals. We talked about these the last time we were on, that you know, we had buy signals at 18,000. And I told people, you can buy it, but just understand that your risk and reward are approximately the same on this. Because even though we could identify the bottom in real time, not after the fact, but at the time, we said, here's where our downside exhaustion signals are showing up. There's no real strong support in Bitcoin until kind of 11,000 to 10,500. So if you were paying 20,000 ish, you've got almost $10,000 downside risk to the $10,000 upside reward that you could get if this comes all the way back up to the $30,000 level where it broke down from. So, you know, equal risk to reward. I gave the slight edge to the bulls because we had the downside exhaustion signal. So if I was going to choose a direction, it was going to be long. But you've got a market that gets easily swayed. The fact that it could fall $2,000, you know, or almost that in a day, shows you how liquid this stuff can get at times too. And I saw some headlines this morning where even the news reporting agencies couldn't come up with a reason. Of course, they're always trying to come up with a reason why something happened. There was no particular reason that you saw this dramatic drop today in the crypto arena. And I don't know what it is other than I can look at, I see, you know, interest rates move up. Gapped up sharply, and you know, the 10 years up over 10 basis points today. S&P is down 45 points. So, you know, it's a risk off, and maybe there's just not enough people to step in right now in order to buy. So until it finds some real support, maybe, you know, maybe it's under pressure for the near term. It's very much matched. You know, the price movement this year has very much matched just kind of what stocks have done.
It has. I think that's the biggest takeaway too, right? Is that a lot has matched what stocks have done because a lot has dropped into bear market territory. And unfortunately, a lot of these bounces that we are seeing are not believed. A lot of people think that this will turn back over. And again, these rallies happened in kind of a quiet time in summer with one Fed meeting. But again, it was a Fed meeting that very much went according to what estimates were. Rick, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. Very interesting comments on all the markets. Thanks for taking a look at all of the different markets that we did. We greatly appreciate your time and greatly value a lot of your insights because, as you've outlined, your levels in a wide range of markets have pretty much been hit spot on. So, Rick, thank you again for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.